I experience strength and hope with another alcoholic, and I start to give of my heart, the language of the heart. Man, I light up like a Christmas tree, you know? And so that's my meat and potatoes today. You know, today what I struggle with, because of course this is a thing of struggling, I struggle with balance. I don't know how to have fun. That's my reality. My girlfriend was just telling me today, when are we going to get out? When, you know, I work, I go to meetings, I meet with my sponsees all day on Saturday. Saturday night, I get into bed with my dogs and my book. Sunday, I get everything ready, and I just have not been able to get out of that routine that, you know. And I know that the God of my understanding wants me to live life and have fun. Yeah, you know, I keep saying, no, because right now I'm still illegal. I can't go anywhere. Well, that doesn't... I'm still illegal. No, I can go to the movies, I can go fellowship, I can have fun, but again, I'm a little turtle. I go back into my turtle mode. So I'm asking God to please show me what he has for me and to please help me to live my life and to enjoy my life and just to continue to be of service, you know. And again, I want to thank everyone. I want to thank you, Regina, for asking me to do this. And, you know, I'm gonna end with this. I heard this when I came into recovery. I came into this program when I came into AA, I came to save my ass. And little did I know that my soul was attached to it. Now, you know, it starts off with the mind, it starts off with practicing the steps, but at some point, the big book talks about that either God is everything or he's nothing. You have to continue. I mean, for me, I had to get to that place of, first it was giving him my alcoholism, my addiction, and then little by little, I had to just start surrendering everything to him. Because the physical sobriety happens, but then what happened to me was I became a shopaholic, I became a workaholic, food was an issue, and I start having to little by little surrender these things to God to be able to be the person and the woman he's made me to be. That's only possible through him. So thank you. God bless all of you. My name is Marisol. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is Sable Palm. And for the grace of God, the 12 steps, loving and strong sponsorship, my sobriety date is September 18th of 2004. And for that, I am eternally grateful. I want to thank the committee. Nadine, thank you for everything you've done. And my friend Regina, you know, she called me and said, oh, by the way, you're the main speaker at the Al-Anon convention. And I was like, I am? Because one of the things that I still struggle with is fear of people. I have an issue with the humans. So needless to say, when I walked in and I saw this room, I really wanted to grab my purse and just run, you know? But today I know that I am of service, and what I do is I open my mouth and I ask God to speak through me, because it's all about him and what he's done for me. I was born in Colombia, was raised in New York City, and I always talk about this because this is my first experience with getting out of self. My mom left Colombia because she was running from my father's alcoholism, and when I was 4 years old, my life changed. My brother went with his godmother, I went with my godmother, my mom came to the United States. And my godfather was a shoemaker. So while he was doing his shoes, I used to go downstairs with him, and I used to sit on the floor with my legs open with a can of glue right in between my legs, and I would just be sticking my head in and sniffing the glue. And they would be, ay, qué linda, you know? And years later, I realized that from the time I was 4 years old, I was trying to get out of self. You know, I had that uncomfortability, that I just wanted to get out of myself. I didn't understand what was going on. My whole life changed. And that's more or less what my alcoholism has been like. So we got to the States. I got to the States when I was 5 years old. Grew up in New York City, like I said. And, you know, I am a drug addict that chooses to recover in AA. But drugs are part of my story, but I try not to touch much on that, but I do talk about how I kept substituting one thing for another. And I did that in recovery, too. I came in, I was able to get sober. And then I started picking up when one of my friends calls the rattles, you know. And little by little, it's been a surrender process. So I went ahead. I'm not going to go into too much because I do want to talk more about my recovery and what it's been like, my journey in recovery. But I picked up glue. I had a big thing with glue and gasoline for something. I just loved it. And what happened was when I was 14 years old, my mom decided to leave New York because New York was the problem, huge codependent. We came to the drug capital of the world, Miami. And within a couple of weeks, I had already found my people, places, and things. And when we got here, my mom, you know, she was desperate. She didn't know what to do, so she put me in my first program. It was the therapeutic community. The ignorance back then was so much that they would let us drink. I couldn't because I was underage, but the people that were overage, they can have a beer or two on the weekends. And their way of therapy was putting you on couches, baggy clothes. It was a therapeutic community. It was what it was. And there, this gentleman came in. He had just finished serving time in prison for attempted murder and drugs. And immediately my first reaction was like, oh, my God, what a catch. Where is he? Yeah. And because that's my mentality. That's part of my codependency. It's all one thing. It's the hole, the God hole that I have in my soul that I try to fill with people, places, things, whatever I can get my hands on. And so, of course, I hooked up with this man, and I married this man. He was 17 years older than I was. And what that did was that took my alcoholism and put it in full drive. And so with this man, he, what they call on the streets, he turned me out. So I started with a very high-class escort service, and before I knew it, I was out on the streets. I was 16 years old, I was strung out on heroin, and I was living on the streets. And this is what my life was for a few years. I was in and out. Somebody talked this morning about Women's Detention Center. That place was like, sometimes when they used to arrest me, I was like, oh, finally I get a break, I get to sleep. That was home away from home for a long time. You know, I was in and out, in and out. Finally, what happened was I got sick of him beating me up and taking my stuff, and so I decided to get together with another drug dealer.
I went ahead and hooked up with this man, and we took a trip to Connecticut.
And in that trip, I ended up getting arrested with drugs and a firearm, and I ended up serving 2.5 years in Niantic, Connecticut. I was a hot 20 years old, 19 when I got arrested. And, you know, when I got there, I was sick and tired. I couldn't understand what was going on, but in that prison, they didn't have H&I. But they did have Bible classes, so I started going to Bible classes. I got my GED, and I was done. I was really in that place where I said, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. My arms were messed. By this time, I had already gone through surgeries. I almost lost my hands due to the heroin use. My body, my I was exhausted. But you see, I didn't realize that I suffered from a disease. That the only cure is God, and the only cure is the 12 steps. I didn't know about the 12 steps at the time. So I ran around prison. I did the GED. I was doing that, and I remember I used to say, "Oh, I'm clean. I'm sober." Back then, I used the term clean. Meanwhile, I was drinking hooch and smoking weed because, again, in my mind, as long as I didn't do that, I can do this. And the big book talks about it, you know. So if I drink the wine, if I drink the beer, if I do this, if I do that. But, you know, I later came to find out when I left, after I got out of prison, I got out, and I just knew this time it was going to be different. And my mother, God bless her heart, like always, she was waiting for me in Miami. She had clothes ready for me. She helped me get a little car. I got a little job. I started working. I started going out to clubs, drinking like a lady. Biggest joke of my life. And you know what? Again, this disease, before I knew it, I was right back where I ended up. At the beginning, each time, of course, it gets a little bit worse. And finally, in March of 1989, my mother went and she got some help. And they said to her, the best thing you can do for your daughter is put her out. Give her an ultimatum. Either she gets help or she needs to go. And, you know, I still get very emotional when I talk about my mom. I know that was the hardest thing that my mom ever did for me, but she put me out on the streets. She says, I have this place. You can go to this place. It's ready for you. I've done everything. Or you have to leave because you can't stay here no more. And I don't know what was different that time because I have experience with homelessness, you know. I joke about that today when I was having some financial problems. I said, you know, if I lose my house, I know how to be homeless. I have experience. But this time it was different. I don't know why, but I just couldn't handle being out there this time. It was, I don't know, it was like my bottom, I'll never forget it, my first bottom, because I wish I can say that I came in 1989 and I've been sober ever since. That has not been my story. That's what I want to touch upon. Something happened in March of 1989. I took everything under the sun, everything I can get my hands on, trying to kill myself. And the next morning, knocking on the door woke me up, the guy from the hotel telling me I needed to get out because I hadn't paid my rent. And then that morning, I said, God, I can't do this anymore. And I went ahead and I called my mom and I said, you know what, Mom? I'm willing to do whatever you tell me to do. Please tell me what to do. So I went ahead and I went to my first 28-day program where they brought in meetings. And this gentleman came in, a black gentleman in a suit, very, very clean cut. And when this man started to talk, he told my story. He talked about the degradation, the humiliation, the pain, the suffering, what he did. You know, one of the things that I used to do the most was I remember coming to and going to the mirror and looking at myself and looking at my mother's face and seeing the pain, yet not being able to stop and just hating myself. I got to a place where I just could not stand the human being that I had become. I lost my values. I lost my morals. I lost everything I was taught. You know, I was raised from a woman. My mom was a very spiritual woman. I was raised Catholic. You know, the presentation was not okay, but she did the best she could. I know that today. But she raised me with a God. She raised me with faith. And I lost all that. I always say that my alcoholism took me to the instinct of an animal. I lost everything. I did whatever I had to do to get what I needed to get. And that's the person, the human being that I became. So I went ahead and I heard, and this man told my story. And I remember the thinking, because of course, you know, the thinking. I said, I wonder if my mom paid him. Because the story was just so many similarities. And that was the first time in my life that I said, you know what? Just maybe I can get this. And that's where my journey started in this recovery process. That was March of 1989. I came in. I forget to mention again.
For 6 months.
In the treatment center where this gentleman says to me, oh, my God, you got beautiful eyes. Took my hostage. Again, you know what I'm saying? Addiction and people, places, and things have always been, it comes hand in hand. You know, my substance comes in the form of many things. So this man and I, of course, we embarked in a relationship, and we both came from the same places. Our counselor used to say, you guys are both very sick. He's the pimp, you're the hooker, and this is not going to work. He comes from the same place as I came. It was exactly the same thing, but, you know, we were going to make it work because we loved each other. Of course, I didn't know anything about love at the time, but... And what happened was, out of that relationship, a beautiful thing happened. I had my first miracle was that I was able to get clean and sober. The second miracle was that I got pregnant when I was 3 years, and I was told I couldn't have children. And I had a daughter born out of that relationship. She's 25 years old today, and she's quite a young lady. Larry, however, he didn't make it. Larry had 12 years. He went out. And we lost him. He overdosed and he passed when my daughter was 8 years old. And that's what we're dealing with this disease. In any event, I started my recovery. And, you know, what's happened to me twice, I went out with 4 years, came right back. One night I was out, came right back. Then I got 10 years. And when I had the 10 years, what happened was Larry died. And immediately what I did, because I wasn't spiritually fit, I was not doing the deal. Immediately when he died, I blamed the rooms, and I blamed the people, and I blamed the sponsor, because, again, I wasn't in the solution. I was already going out to, I always say, property, money, and prestige. You know, coming from where I came from, I was broken, I was homeless, I didn't have absolutely anything. So when I came into recovery and I started getting the gifts of recovery, because we do clean up very well, It's astonishing. I went from being an eighth grade dropout. I came into recovery. I got my GED in prison. That sounds so amazing. I got my GED in prison. but I got my GED. I came out, and I remember when I was in La Casita, my sponsor, I called my sponsor, and I said to her, I said, okay, so what do I do now? I didn't know how to do anything. All I knew how to do was sell drugs and, you know, sell my body, and that's about it. And I said to her, so what I'm thinking is that I can do, I know that I shouldn't be around the drugs, so what I'll do is I'll maybe escort on the side. And she looked at me, and she said, that's my sponsor today, by the way. All these years later, she's now my sponsor. She looked at me, she says, oh, honey, we don't do that here. This is about changing everything. And I looked at her, I said, well, what am I supposed to do? I don't know how to do anything. She says, well, we're going to start by applying in places. So apply anywhere as long as you get something. And that's what happened. I applied, and for the grace of God, because I know everything in my life is God's footprints and handprints, I ended up working for an attorney. As his receptionist. Don't know how that happened, but that happened. And he was an active alcoholic. For some reason, I attract him a lot. And I started working for this man, and life, and then this attorney came in that was in, he was in the middle of, he was finishing up, he was doing his internship, and he said, why don't you go to school? And one day he showed up with the application. Next thing I know, I'm in college. And of all the professions in the world, I'm a paralegal. Only through the, again, you know, how do you go from there to here? God. And so I started the path, but what happened to me with 4 years was I wanted more. I wanted to get more money, money. I started little by little getting away from what's the most important thing. Today for me, and this is just me, the most important step in my life is the 11th step. And I'm going to say why. I wake up in the mornings with irritability. I call it IRD. I wake up with an alcoholic mind. For me, what I've learned in this recovery is that the most important thing that I need to do in the morning is plug myself to the power, which is God. Meditation and prayer enables me to do that. I find that when I do the 11th step, no matter what's going on in my life, when I get out, first thing I do is get on my knees and ask God to please help me stay sober. And I take my dogs out, I come back, I sit for 20 minutes, I do my meditation. Then I get my coffee and I do my readings. That's my routine every morning. What happens to me is that when I practice the 11th step, I'm able to practice the rest of the steps. Because I, of my own making, have the default setting of thinking that
one of the assignments that I did in the workshop, it says, if I only had.
And when I did that assignment, what I realized is that I kept thinking, and that my default mind, my setting is that once I get the education, I'm going to be okay. Once I get married, I'm going to be okay. Once I get the house, I'm going to be okay. Well, I've gotten those things, and I haven't been okay. The hole is a God-sized hole. It's a hole in my soul, and the only entity that can fill that hole is a relationship with God. And the more I have this, the more I need it. That's what I find for myself, because ego continues to assert itself. And of course, we're dealing now with the wonderful 6 and 7, which I find is the meat and potatoes of this program. Because, I go from 1 minute, I'm like, oh, God, thank you. And I'm in a place of blessing and a place of love. And the next thing I know, someone cuts me off and I turn into a raving maniac. The hell? And then I have to go back. And then sometimes my daughter says, Mom, you're like nuts. 1 minute you're praying, 1 minute you're... And that's what this is. It's a daily struggle of staying on the beam. I'm huge into speakers. I love speakers. I love speaker tapes. I got big into Bob B, Bob D, Sandy B. I follow Mr. Spatz everywhere that I hear he's speaking, because I like to hear people that have the solution. I've learned that Sandy B used to say something that stayed with me. He says, there's one problem and one solution. The problem is separation from God. The solution is union with God, and that's what it's all about. So, 4 years, I went out, came right back. My sponsor says, you need to stop school, because, of course, I was taking 5 classes. I was working full time. And then in the midst, I got pregnant with my daughter. She says, you need to stop school. You need to start, put first things first, the program. I started doing the deal. And then what happened to me, like at 6 or 7 years, I had the house, I had the education, but man, I don't have a man. I need a man. And my friends joke about me today because I used to go to the Spanish meetings and share about how I had everything, but I had no man, and I needed to get a man. And what happened to me with 7 years is, I always share about this, the first thing that went out the window for me was not meetings. The first thing that went out the window for me was conscious contact with God. That's the first thing that I stopped doing was praying. I started what I call the microwave prayers. You know those? You know, you're getting ready in the morning, you're running around. Yeah, we take clean up. That's it. The parroting prayers. And the next thing I know, I started slipping into old behaviors. And I want to share about that because I think it's so important what happened to me with 10 years of sobriety. I was a rageaholic. Rageaholic. I had anger inside of me that was just amazing. I was that person that when I got angry, with years in sobriety, I would tear my house apart. I still have that today, but for the grace of God, I don't rage. But I do have my moments where I need to stop and ask God to please help me. And, you know, and that anger I found out through working steps and getting outside help, because the big book talks about going and getting whatever we need to do to get better. Is that I had so much self-hatred and so much self-loathing that I couldn't forgive myself, you know? And although I've worked the steps multiple times, and I've done 8 and 9, and I made amends, I kept forgiving to forgive the most important person, which was me. I had such a difficult time with that because of the fact that my alcoholism took me to such degradation. That I just thought that I was just, I never saw myself through God's eyes. That's one of the prayers that my old sponsor, Maggie, used to tell me, because I used to tell her, I used to say, I have so much shame still. And she'd tell me, honey, ask God to help to see you through his eyes, because he loves me. I am his favorite, okay? I know there's a few of us here that feel that way, but I am, and He's my everything today. You know, that's the relationship that I have with him. I have pictures of him everywhere, in my car, in my office, in my house. I mean, I'm in love with him. And in any event, so at 7 years, I started going backwards. And what I've learned is that if I'm not moving forward in my recovery, and what that means for me is praying and meditation, number one, going to meetings, working with others, service, you know, and accountability to a sponsor. You know, I have a sponsor. I check in with her once a week when everything's fine. When I'm having issues, you know, what do I do? What is the solution? And the most important thing is humility. And every day I ask God to keep me teachable. I know nothing, you know, because that's another thing that happened to me with time. I thought, oh, I got this. When you hear yourself say, I got this, because I have nothing.
Talk to your sponsor.
I am nothing, absolutely nothing without these 12 steps and without the God of my understanding. So at 7 years, I started going backwards. It took 3 years for my cunning. You know, they talk about this disease being cunning, powerful, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Thank you. And so what happened was, I was very nervous. As you can tell, I'm ADHD. I'm very nervous. It's just the way I am. It's part of my personality. So I went to another doctor, not my doctor, because my doctors know that I am a recovering alcoholic. And I told him that I was very restless and I needed to get something to sleep. And, you know, my alcoholism, this is the biggie about me. I don't know if you guys can relate, but even if I have a headache, when I see the Tylenol bottle, you know, it says take one every 4 hours, I always see take four every hour. You know, take four once an hour. I always see the opposite when I am not spiritually fit. My perception is not well. If I am not spiritually fit, it's just not. I see things, you know, the big book talks about us being delusional. It talks about us being mental defects. I remember when I read that, I was, whoa, you know, yeah, I'm a mental defect. And I mean, that's just the way it is. And that's okay today, thank God. And, you know, what ended up happening was I ended up in a place of darkness. You know, I've seen this happen a lot. I've seen people come in these rooms that have never done, you know, that just drank, and they go out and they relapse with other substances, and that's what happened to me. I went out and I used something that I thought I thought I had seen it all. I went out and I got really bad really fast. And at the time, my daughter was 12 years old. My daughter had never seen her mother in use. And it got really ugly, really bad. And for the grace of God, once again, I left the employer I was with because he was always in, also in the program, and he knew something was wrong. And I went to work for another attorney, and I'm in the lobby of that place. And Lord and behold, here comes a very good friend of mine from the program, and she looked at me. She says, "Hey, what you doing here?" I said, "Oh, I work for so and so." She says, "I haven't seen you in meetings. Are you okay?" I'm like, "I'm fine. I'm a mess." She tells of a story that once I walked in and I had the concealer. I had the little dots, but I forgot to blend it in. So Maggie looks at me. She says, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "I'm fine." And the little dots, she says, "Well, maybe you want to blend in your concealer." And I'm like, "Oh." But through that woman being there, through the divine intervention of that woman being there, my family found out what was going on with me, and they were able to do an intervention August of 2004. And, you know, I talk about this because, you know, people say that time doesn't matter. Try losing it and getting it back. That was the hardest thing in my life. I had lost all hope. I could not stop. I would go to meetings. I would pick up a white chip, go out to my car, and continue to do the thing. I couldn't stop. The phenomenon of craving was so much worse. They talk about this disease continuing to progress even when we're sober. I am a testimony to that. I was the amount that I used, it's only for the grace of God that I made it alive. One morning, my mom woke up and came to the living room, and I was OD'd in the family room, naked, and my daughter saw me. And you know, one of the things that happened to me with 10 years was when my daughter said to me, "I don't know who you are, but I need my mommy back," because she had already lost her father to this disease. And through the grace of God and again divine intervention, I was placed in a program, And I remember when I walked into the program, all I kept telling the girl was, "My God, I just want one more, just one more." And she looked at me and she says, "Marisol, have you asked God to help you? Have you gotten on your knees?" And I said to her, I said, "You know, I have so much shame with God. I feel so like I've let everyone down." She says, "Well, why don't you just try it?" And that night I went and I got on my knees and I said, "God, I know that I really screwed this up, but I need you to help me. Please lift this obsession, because the obsession was killing me." And I went to bed, I read the big book, I read the story. One of my favorite stories is about the fella that puts down the drink for 25 years. And when he's retired, he takes out his slippers and he starts to drink, and within 4 years, he's gone. I love that story because it tells me that no matter how much time I have. And I woke up the next morning, I got on my knees, not even thinking it. I got like right back into automatic, again, the grace of God. I went and I stood in the line for my breakfast. And my girl looks at me and she says, we're at lunch already. We went to morning meditation, morning group, and then I'm at lunch. And she looks at me and she says, "You haven't talked about drinking today or about using." And I looked at her and I said, "Oh, my God, the obsession has been lifted." And once again, God did the miracle. And that was in September 18th, I went in. This happened like September 21st, September 22nd. And I want you to know that from that moment on, I grabbed on for dear life. Okay, I went in. That woman that found me at the building where she became my sponsor, we got immediately into the solution, because one thing I did know about this program is that the solution is the steps. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous is the steps and the traditions. And I always tell my girls that I sponsor, I said, I am one thing only, and that is a guide through the 12 steps. And all I can give you is my experience, strength, and hope. It's not just going to meetings. I'm sorry, but that doesn't work for me. I have to get into the solution. I have to get all these blocks out of the way so that I can find the God of my understanding. The big book talks about that. This, our dilemma is finding a power. Once I find that power, and I work in developing that power, that's where my solution lies. So I started my journey back into the program, and you know, a lot of things have happened since I started this program, since I got back. Next month I'll be celebrating again 13 years for the grace of God. And life happens, you know what I'm saying? At a couple of years, I found out that I had chronic cirrhosis of the liver. And this is a God story. It was 2008. I was doing real estate paralegal at the time, and the market went south. And my boss says to me, I think you should get all your tests done and everything because you're going to be without health insurance and without a job. So I went, and they found out that my enzymes of my liver are through the roof. My liver is already scarring. I'm not doing very well. And I tell the doctor, you know, I'll get back to you when I get a job. Because I'm being laid off. I go back to work the next week. They offer me a job in that same place upstairs in another department. So the God of my understanding used me losing that job to get me to the doctor so that then I would have a job and I was able to go through the treatment, which at the time it was interferon and ribavirin. And that rocked my world. So what did I do? I made more meetings. I prayed more. I did more service. I threw myself more into the program. And I joined the support group that went through that. I got through that. I then, right after I finished treatment, that I went into remission within a couple of months, I lost my job the following month. It was just like such a... and then I went to a meeting, and somebody from a meeting heard that I was looking for a job, and I got a job immediately. In the January of 2011, my mom got diagnosed with cancer. And we started that journey. It was a year of in and out of the hospitals. But, you know, I am so grateful that I was able to be present for my mom. On Monday, it'll be her six-year anniversary since she passed. And I went to the rooms. I cried. My girls carried me. They came. They got me. I went to the hospital. I did her hair. I put her makeup on. I helped bathe her. And that was such a gift that I was able to do for my mom. And you know, in her moment of passing, the only thing she had to say to me was, honey, please stay close to God and stay sober, you know? And I hold that very dear to my heart. Right after that happened, I had a heart attack. I believe it's because I had such a broken heart. I had a heart attack. I was having my hair done. I feel this something. Next thing I know, I'm getting rushed to the hospital because I had a full-blown heart attack. I got through it sober, you know? Then one of the things that I had not, that had me in that self-loathing that I spoke about was the fact that, this is so embarrassing. So I got to the United States in 1968, and I never bothered to take care of my papers. I was a permanent resident. But due to my felonies and arrest, I never took care of it, not able. So in 2008, I started. I went to Connecticut, tried to get my case set aside. They denied me. I came back. 2015, I found out that there were some changes in the law, so I went ahead and I started the procedure again. And I'm still with the new administration and everything. I'm still in the hallway with what happened as far as my healing is concerned. As a result of that, I had to go to the police station to get my fingerprints. I mean, I knew I had many arrests. But what really surprised me was when my attorney said to me in my disclosure, she says, you never told me you got arrested in Martin County and did 60 days. I looked at her and said, I've never been there. She says, well, your fingerprints say differently. You served 60 days. And you know, what happened was that I realized at that moment that my alcoholism ripped me off of all my youth. I started when I was 11 years old. I came into recovery at 26 with my two relapses. But what I realized was that there was big years of my life that just, they were a blah. And through that process, I was able to sit there and I was able to piece together what my alcoholism had been. The degradation, the in and out of jails, the everything it had been. And, you know, I finally got to a place where I put all that on the table and I said, you know, God, our serenity prayer talks about acceptance of the things that I can't change that. I just can't, you know. But I need you to please help me forgive myself. And I got to that place through prayer, through meditation, through working with my sponsor, through working with other women, because God has a way of putting women in my life that it's exactly what I need. And I finally got to a place where I was able to say, I'm okay. I'm not that woman anymore, which is something that my sponsor tells me. You are not that woman anymore. Today you are, I am a responsible, I'm a woman of morals, of everything this program gives me, my integrity, my honesty. When I say I'm going to do something, I do it. My daughter knows that anything her mom says, I'm there. All that I owe to the 12 steps, to the 12 traditions, you know. This program is transformative. You know, it took a wretch like me, and what it has done is just incredible. And I know that today, for me, the most important thing that I can do is be of maximum service. I told my sponsor this. So the new woman, when my sponsor, my sponsor that I had for 10 years decided to become a nun. Only in this program do you see this. She went from being, she got thrown out of a Christian party because she was sitting in the dance floor touching herself, and they escorted her. I mean, a crazy story, and today she's a nun. She's a hermit up in New Jersey. And I owe that woman my spirituality, because every time I called Maggie with a problem, pray more, get on your knees, read this, read that, because I do believe in reading other literature. I do whatever I need to do today to get that connection with the God of my understanding. So I lost my train of thought. What was I saying? I'm sorry. Huh? Oh, so I got the sponsor. So she said to me when she's leaving, that's the ADHD kicking in. So when she's leaving, she says, you need to get a sponsor before I go. Because I was having a real hard time letting go of her. And I start thinking, I start praying about it. Because you see, I go to God with everything. I go to everything that I need to decide, I go to God with. Because I know that He will guide me in here. And I start praying and I'm meditating, and Bernie comes to my mind. And she was my sponsor when I first came in 1989, the one that told me, oh, honey, we don't escort around here. That's not okay. She's got, she'll have 30 years, and she's a woman. Her thing is all about God. Every time I call her, well, meditate a little longer, honey. Pray a little longer. So when she started sponsoring me, I told her my sponsor group, I only sponsor two women. That's my limit. And she looked at me, she says, and why is that? I said, well, I have a full-time job. I have a demanding job. I commute. You know, I got to make my meetings. I'm also a member of Al-Anon, because I started going to Al-Anon when I hit some bottoms with my daughter. I said, I can't do more than two. And she says, oh, no. When a woman comes up to you and asks for you to help her, it is your duty to help her. God will take care of the rest. Oh, boy. And for some reason, I started raising my hand, and women started asking me to sponsor them. And you know what? It works out. It works out. You know, I have these women, and every time I walk away, I feel the connection of God. Because, you know, Sandy Beach used to talk about that the most beautiful thing you can do is help another. Because, you know, as you're alone with yourself and your disease, you start, I don't need this program. Marisol's program's better. I don't need these meetings. And that stinking thinking starts. But the minute I start talking about...